This is Evolutionary Radio. This is your host, Trevor Caritzen. As always, my loyal and faithful co-host, Steve Smee, is joining me.
Hey, guys. We're doing a mid-afternoon episode this time. We usually do it in the evening. So we have a special guest who came on. Trevor, you want to introduce him?
First off, let our listeners know, what are you having for lunch, Steve?
I'm having avocado salad with apple cider vinegar as dressing. So that's my first meal of the day. It's actually early. I usually eat my first meal at 1 o'clock. I ate it at 11 because we are doing a keto podcast. So in terms of that, that's my presentation. So those of you who can see us on audio, that is my avocado salad with apple cider vinegar. Great, great meal right there, guys. And that's how I stay so fucking lean. That's my lunch. That's my breakfast, technically. That's my breakfast. That's my first meal of the day.
It's
breakfast.
Perfect timing because today is a keto Q&A episode. Joining us is Alex Cunningham. Alex is a chemical engineer, and he's also one of the head partnership at Perfect Keto. So, Alex, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. First off, tell your listeners a little bit about yourself and tell us about Perfect Keto.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. I'm stoked to be on and honored that you make room during the daytime for me. So Perfect Keto is started as an exogenous ketone company a couple years ago. There wasn't really anything great on the market as far as exogenous ketones. Like, they were either like wildly expensive or had garbage ingredients. And so it kind of became our mission. Like, it was selfish. Like, we just wanted to make one that we would like to take ourselves. And the whole premise behind the company is that, like, you know, me and Dr. Anthony Gustin, he's the founder. I was one of his first hires. And we kind of, you know, had this very unhealthy past, like in our early 20s and stuff like that. And then we kind of got into, you know, finding out that, like, food could make you, could change the way, like, you feel. So we got obsessed with health and nutrition, fitness, things like that. We kind of moved into paleo, doing no carb and slow carb. And then we got intrigued by doing, you know, damn near no carbohydrates with the ketogenic diet. And once we, like, eliminated carbs and got below 30 grams and started just doing, like, the leafy greens and apple cider vinegar duo, you know, we started to feel outstanding. We were looking at each other like, holy crap, like, this mental focus is phenomenal. And, so we looked at exogenous ketones, and that's just a way to kind of boost your own blood ketone levels. It's kind of like a no-carb Gatorade. You might take it for the same reasons, but you feel a whole lot better than drinking a Gatorade. So that's how that started. And, you know, since then, it's taken off into MCT powder, collagen powder, and nut butter. We got bars coming pretty soon. And obviously keto's taken off, so it's been outstanding ways to, like, reach a whole lot of people and talk about, like, the health conversation.
So Alex, you're a genius. Just for our listeners, what exactly is a ketogenic diet? Like, right now, keto is it's a very hot topic, right? Everyone's talking about it. Everyone at least has thought about going keto. But when something becomes a hot topic, there's a lot of misinformation. So for our listeners, can you explain exactly what is a ketogenic diet? And who would benefit from it?
Absolutely. So I'm glad you brought that up, but there's so much misinformation. Like, I look on the internet now, and it's just ridiculous amount of keto information. And so I just feel bad for people that are starting out. Like, where do you freaking start? And the deal is it's not easy, but it's pretty damn simple. Like, you just cut out carbohydrates except for leafy green vegetables. And you eat a lot of extremely high quality meats, and you, you know, fall in love with eating phenomenal food, and you keep all the fat. And so what happens is, over the first few days, when you starve yourself of carbohydrates, you drain your muscle glycogen to the point that your body starts metabolizing fat into ketones. So I like to think about it as just like there's two highways. There's, you know, you can metabolize starches into glucose and use that, and it kind of creates a blood sugar roller coaster or you can be fat adapted and metabolizing dietary fat and body fat into ketones. And with fat, your blood sugar is just very stable. You have this outstanding, like, laser beam feeling of energy. But
Alex, let me interrupt you there. Is there a website that we can go to? Because if you type keto diet, you get so many different websites. And some of them, you know, I look at it and I'm like, wow, I can't believe they're actually saying to eat that for keto. That actually wouldn't put you in keto. So, I mean, is there a trusted website, trusted book, trusted graph, trusted anything that someone can go online right now and look at, maybe on your website, with a list of foods that actually are keto?
Steve, what the hell, man? Go on my website. I've got a 3-part keto series just posted.
Didn't know that.
TrevorDietCoach.com. I got probably a 50-page write-up on keto diets and a full sample meal plan. But Alex, there's always room for more information. Is there a website that you would recommend?
Totally. I mean, shoot, I got to check yours out because that sounds dynamite. Like, folks just want to know, what the hell is the keto diet and how exactly do I eat to start it? Like, tell me exactly what to eat. So it sounds like a, you know, awesome resource you put together. There's a lot of people doing like very good things out there. I'm super proud of our website. We've tried to, you know, cater it to exactly what folks are looking for as far as a guide, just how to get started, grocery shopping list and things of that nature. So that's www.perfectketo.com. But there's awesome books out there. There's the Art and Science of Low Carbohydrate Living by Dr. Stephen Finney and Dr. Volek. I love that book. And then the Ketogenic Bible is awesome for like drawing a whole lot of analogies and making kind of these nutritional concepts stick.
Before I move on, let me kind of turn the question around. Is there foods that are considered keto that the YouTube gurus say are keto, but are actually not? Let me turn it around and ask that. Instead of, you know, because like I said, you go on YouTube, you watch these videos from these gurus, and they're putting out so much shitty information on a day-to-day basis, and they have 150,000 followers, but they're putting bullshit advice out there. So what are the foods that are bullshit that aren't really keto?
I love the question because it is brutal to see some of the recommendations out there. And at the top of the list would be these bars and just any sort of like processed food that is marketing itself as being keto or having like net carbohydrates and stuff like that. And I would just challenge anyone out there who is, you know, eating something that has like 20 carbs, but 18, you know, sugar alcohols or fiber or something like that, and test your blood sugar. Like the way to find out if it's keto, you know, you can just test your blood ketones and do it before and after your meal, and you'll know that way. But yeah, like you said, like there's just garbage out there. And like the fact that you're eating something that puts you in ketosis, that doesn't necessarily mean that you're being healthy. You know what I mean? Like you can eat an extremely unhealthy diet and be in ketosis. And I've definitely been there before. And it took some hard knocks to learn that, like, you know, your health depends on the quality of your micronutrition, not on the quality of your macronutrients, which might put you in a metabolic state of ketosis, but doesn't mean you're going to be feeling great. So I'd still say steer clear of all the stuff that says, you know, net carbs or anything that markets itself as being healthy probably isn't healthy. You know what I mean?
Just Alex, I'm gonna drop some science here for you. So if you've ever read, you know, like a protein bar and it'll have like 25 grams of carbs, but then 20 grams will be fiber. So it'll say only 5 grams net carbs, keto friendly, something like that, right? I'm not going to say the name of the company producing these bars, but it starts with a Q and it's pretty popular. You can buy them at GMC, Popeyes, or anything. So they use something called isomaltoisoacylides as the fiber source. It's abbreviated as IMO. If you look in the label, it's in pretty much every single protein bar. So what they did is they took this carbohydrate, they exposed it to salivary amylase, and because the salivary amylase didn't digest the carbohydrate, they're like, boom, it's a fiber, we're rocking, right? The thing is salivary amylase, that's the amylase in your mouth. Only 10% of carbohydrate digestion occurs in your mouth. As you know, Alex, most carbohydrate digestion occurs in your small intestine, right? So when they took that same carb and they exposed it to pancreatic amylase, the amylase that gets digested, that gets released into your intestines, it digested the carb. Mm. So they're using false information here. They're basically saying like, look, we exposed it to amylase. It didn't digest it. It's a fiber. But that's not true, because if it actually goes into your intestines, which is going to happen if you eat it, it's going to be digested. So it's exactly like you said, is people are buying these protein bars thinking like, oh, there's only 5 grams of net carbs. You know, as keto, I can keep my carbs under 30 grams and I'm rocking. But they're actually getting all of those carbs. So it's a whole freaking marketing BS. And that's the problem, is there's different regulations when it comes to supplements versus food labels. So if they put on the food label, if they put on the bar that it's a supplement, they're allowed huge variations with labels, right? It's kind of like they can put amino acids in their product and say they're non-caloric. But as you know, an amino acid and protein is basically the same thing. So it's, yeah, all those keto-friendly bars, they're crap. Give them to a friend you don't like.
I did not know that science, but that is fascinating. And I totally believe it, because I've tried all the bars, I've tested my blood sugar, and it spikes the crap out of it. It's been a year-long process working on our own bars, trying to make it something that is truly keto-friendly and we would eat ourselves on a ketogenic diet. So I'm glad you just aired that all out.
Do you have a blood glucose monitor? I'm sure you do. They're not expensive.
I do. I have it in my backpack. I travel around and people look at me like I'm crazy.
I'm a horrible, horrible person, because I got one and my insurance actually covered it because they thought I was diabetic when I submit the receipts. To be fair, I didn't lie. I just submit the receipts and they assumed I was diabetic, so they paid for it for me. But what I did, just to prove one of my clients, because they were arguing with me, they're like, no. These, I'm just going to say it, whatever. If Quest throws a brick through my window, that's cool. I'm like, these Quest bars are lying to you on the label. And this person was like, no, they can't do that. So what I did is I took a Quest bar, which has 200 calories, and then I took a Chewy granola bar that also had 200 calories, right? So basically I took a Quest bar, and then I took a granola bar, same amount of calories. And what I did on Monday, I woke up, tested my blood glucose, ate that bar. Half an hour later, I tested my blood glucose again. The following day, I did the exact same thing. The test results were pretty much identical. It was like 3 grams of glucose difference.
That's insane. So it's just like candy.
You might as well just go eat an oatmeal to-go bar or a granola bar or whatever.
That shit makes me feel like crap, man. I can tell you, regardless, I mean, those Quest bars make me feel like shit. I don't know how people eat them. My question is, like, what about ketone strips? Like, those ketone strips you buy from the drugstore, will those give you any sort of accuracy as far as if you're pissing out ketones?
That's a great topic. I think the pee strips are a valid way to test, like, in a binary fashion, if you are in ketosis or not for the first couple of weeks. Because the ketone that you really care about is beta-hydroxybutyrate in your blood, and you're excreting ketones that are not beta-hydroxybutyrate in your urine, and they're basically happen as a byproduct. So it's an effective way to see, like, yes, I have an excess of ketones for the first couple of weeks, but then what happens is your cells start getting with the program of, oh, okay, I'm going to be running on ketones. And so what they do is they upregulate the metabolic machinery, which is, you know, the mitochondrial density and mitochondrial efficiency, and they upregulate things called monocarboxylic acid transporters, which basically enhance the ability for your cells to use ketones. So people get extremely discouraged, like in week 3 and week 4 when they're peeing and it's not purple and they're like, oh my God, am I doing something wrong? I don't know. But I feel great. And I'm still losing weight, but I must be doing something wrong. And that's definitely not true. Like, your body's just getting adapted. And I've definitely tested my blood versus, done the pee strips back to back. And sure enough, like, I was at my normal, like, you know, 0.8, 0.9 millimolar blood ketones and showing nothing on the pee strips. So after the first couple of weeks, I say ditch it, invest in the pee strips. If you're doing keto, it's the best, you know, $80-$100 that you'll spend, and it'll make you feel a whole lot better.
So you're going to have the blood test, you're going to have to prick your finger, right, to do that?
Yep.
Okay, so that's all. They haven't come out. They haven't invented something better than that yet, huh? What about artificial sweeteners? Because this is something that I've kind of went back and forth on, and I'm not 100% sure, but I always err on the side of caution. I've read Dr. Jason Fung's book, and he is basically not a fan of artificial sweeteners, even stevia, because he thinks that that will actually kick you out of ketosis or out of a fast, because you know the body, the brain thinks one thing or another. And we've had guests on this podcast, some of Trevor's holistic doctors that he brought on, who also say the same thing. What's been your experience with artificial sweeteners?
I feel the same way as you. Like, I feel extremely skeptical of every single sweetener. I felt the same way about stevia. I don't know the answer about kicking you out of a fast, but I can certainly imagine that if your body's like tasting all this sweetness, it's going to start anticipating it needs to metabolize sugar. So I can totally see that maybe it would kick you out of a fast. However, with stevia, like, we have stevia in most of our products, and we like rigorously test ourselves before, during, and after, like 10, 20, 40 an hour. And they definitely do not, you know, hinder our ketone levels. So I've found to be comfortable with stevia. But besides that, I just steer clear. Like, the sugar alcohols, they make my stomach feel awful. If there's artificial sweeteners, I know I'm probably eating a processed food, so I'm probably in the wrong situation anyways. So
Diet Coke is definitely out of the question, but something with a little stevia would be okay, is what you're saying.
100%. Like, there's just so much literature showing that aspartame just screws with your gut so much that it affects your normal ability to metabolize glucose. And so it makes, you, when you do eventually eat real glucose, it's going to make it more likely to be stored as fat or not cleared from your bloodstream.
What Alex says is 100% correct. So basically, when you take an artificial sweetener, when you take Splenda, aspartame, whatever, your body, the taste buds in your mouth sense something sweet. So your body basically gets all of its machinery ready to metabolize carbohydrates. Because it's like, okay, we're tasting something sweet. It would almost be like you just took a huge tablespoon of honey or something, right? So it gets your insulin levels high. But then when there's no actual carbohydrates, it screws up your whole body, because your body's like, okay, we're gonna get all these carbs, and then nothing happens. So there's a lot of research showing that your muscle insulin sensitivity, everything like that, if you're consistently using artificial sweeteners, it really screws up your whole body. And it makes sense if you think about it, right? It'd almost be like you go to the gym, you got your gym shoes on, you get ready to go for a workout, and then you don't go. And you do that like 6 times, but then on the 7th time, you actually get a workout in. Right? If you had a training partner like that, you'd fire that training partner. If he shows up to the gym and like half the time he doesn't actually work out with you, he just shows up and then leaves. So basically it confuses your body, and your body basically goes like, what the heck is going on? Like, we're expecting all these carbs. We're not getting any carbs. Eventually we do get carbs, and then we're all confused. It's just, so that's basically what happens.
That's the outstanding analogy. It's basically like crying wolf.
100%. So Alex, one thing I wanted to ask you about is ketone supplements. What exactly are they beneficial for? And then right now, if you Google ketone supplements, you're on Amazon, there's so many different forms of ketone supplements. And then the price point is so different, right? Like, you can buy a ketone supplement, it's like $15. And then on the other end, there's like ketone supplements that are like $80. And just like, just logically, you know, being an engineer, they can't all be the same. Like there's this $80 ketone product, it has to be more expensive for a reason. Is there like, is it kind of like protein powder, where you have like, you know, a cheap whey concentrate and then a more superior whey isolate? Or like, talk to our listeners about ketone supplements.
Absolutely. So this is kind of where we got into the fold, was because, you know, a couple of years ago, there was only a couple products. Well, let me back up. So the purpose of why you might take exogenous ketones is to raise your ketone levels. And so in the first couple of days, you're definitely fighting the keto flu. Your body doesn't have ketones. It's not used to producing it, because for someone like myself, I've been, you know, eating carbs for every single day for 30 years, and my body's never had the stimulus to break down fats into ketones. So it's a rough first couple of weeks. And so you might take ketones to be a band-aid to bridge that gap, and it'll artificially raise your ketone levels for a couple hours at a time. So I like to think of it as a little ketone band-aid that'll get you, you know, over that bridge to where you want to be, which is probably nutritional ketosis. And so there's a lot of misinformation. Again, like I'm blown away by like the marketing that's it, you know, it can erase bad decisions and, you know, it's a carb blocker, anything like that. It's just absurd, but it's a really good tool to help with keto flu. And then, you know, once I've been in keto for a while, I use it before I work, before I do a little like 2-hour work session. I feel outstanding mentally. I use it a little bit before a workout. I kind of just like to make sure that my body has all the available substrates that it needs, including ketones. And then I even like it when, you know, I'm not eating a ketogenic diet. It's still used preferentially in the presence of carbohydrates, especially by organs like your blood, or sorry, your heart and your brain. So you feel this sense of well-being, you feel this heightened sense of mental clarity. So I think they're just like a dynamite, you know, supplement that is just not very well known yet. It's not ubiquitous like protein, but like with protein, there's awful quality protein and then there's high quality protein. And so what you really want to look for is the amount of beta hydroxybutyrate that is in the product, because that's the active ingredient. That's the thing that's going to raise your blood ketone levels. And so, you know, when we first got into the market, there was one good one. There was a good product out there, but it tasted so bad. We figured no one would ever eat this thing because it just tasted so bad. And it was also insanely high priced. And then there was this other leading product, but it had a proprietary blend and it wouldn't share, you know, how much BHB is in it. And it's still like that. And, you know, shady stuff like that happens throughout the supplement industry. And you got to be pretty wary. There's also these things called raspberry ketones, which are technically like have the chemical structure that, you know, meets the standard for a ketone, but it's not beta hydroxybutyrate. It's not going to be doing anything for raising your blood ketone levels. So it is kind of a minefield out there. And, you know, the more I've gotten into this industry, the more kind of like blown away I've been by just the shadiness of the supplement industry. One more last thing is that, you know, I'm amazed by how little regulation there is in the supplement industry. Like there's things that we actually have to pay our manufacturers to not include ingredients like emulsifiers and flow agents. Because what happens is, you know, our products will gum up the machines more often. And so they have to slow down production and produce less units. So we have to pay extra money to keep it clean. Anyways, I'm done.
You want to know what's amazing, Alex? So I formulate supplements for a living. It's one of the things I do. In Canada, we have extremely strict supplement regulations, right? We have to send bacteria counts. We have to send certificates of analysis. Every single ingredient we want to put in a supplement, we have to third-party test and send certificates of analysis in order to put that in our product. In the US, all you have to write is a little disclaimer that says, this product is not intended to cure or diagnose any disease, and you're allowed to sell it. It's absolutely crazy.
That's remarkable.
It's literally like, in the US, anything goes. And you can put the most outrageous claims, and if you have that little disclaimer, you're allowed to legally sell it. So I could sell vitamin C. Like, let's just say it was just vitamin C pills. And I could say, Trevor's Miracle Supplement will make your penis 3 inches bigger, will make you better looking, will make you attract more women, and add 5 inches to your arms. I could legally sell that in the US with that disclaimer.
Damn, Trevor, we should start up our own supplement company. I'll be the guy. We'll make a quick million, we'll be done.
So Alex, we just got a listener question for you. They want to know ketone supplements. Is this something you can use daily or do you have to cycle off of them?
Great question. And you can absolutely use it daily. I recently just went on a carnivore diet for a few weeks and I cut out all supplements and I missed dosing with these ketones. I usually do like a half scoop in the morning, maybe a half scoop in the afternoon and half scoop during a workout. So I range from like 1 to 2 scoops a day. And I've kind of built up a tolerance to that. You know, sometimes it can cause like some stomach issues at first. So I'd encourage going slow at first and then finding whatever the minimum effective dose is for you and just kind of staying at that range, but you can definitely take it every single day. People are fearful that, you know, if you're taking exogenous ketones, then you're going to be downregulating your endogenous production of ketones, which is a valid fear, I guess, because there's certainly negative feedback loops in the body where, you know, if you're giving your body a certain substance, it's going to, you know, take it down a notch as far as production. But fortunately, that's incorrect for ketones. And there's literature out there showing that the presence of ketone bodies will actually stimulate your cells to, you know, upregulate that metabolic machinery to accommodate that fuel source. So I always see it that, you know, when I take ketones, I see a little bit of boost in my blood ketone levels for 30 minutes to 2 hours, and then goes right back to my baseline and never goes below.
So here's my question, Alex. I know Trevor wants to follow up, but here's one of our user questions, and I'm kind of going to like mix it into what I want to ask you. So I'm assuming you're in ketosis pretty much every day of your life, correct?
Except when I travel.
Okay. So, and how long have you been doing this?
Like 2 years.
Okay. So, I mean, you look like a really fit, lean guy. So obviously it's working for you. Tell us on a daily basis, what is your diet look like? Are you sticking to like 3 meals a day spread out, like morning, lunch, dinner? Do you intermittent fast for half the day, then do lunch, dinner? What's your daily diet looking like as far as meal timing and meal frequency?
It's awesome. I'm always tinkering with, you know, how I eat throughout the day. Like I usually kind of go and like, I'll do a certain thing for a week and then change it up and do another thing for a week. But for a long time I woke up with the, you know, the bulletproof coffee, the high fat coffee in the morning. And right now I'm digging the intermittent fasting where, so like the previous day I'll stop eating around 6:30, 7 o'clock. And then that gives me a couple hours to digest my last meal and, you know, kind of be separated from that insulin response. And I end up feeling like much better as I'm going to sleep. And I feel like much more restful sleep. So that's been like an exciting new development for myself. And then I wake up and I've just been doing coffee and ketones in the morning. And, you know, people have different opinions about fasting and what is and what isn't, but that's been doing it for me where I feel, you know, outstanding in the morning, even without any breakfast. And then I'll have my first meal at like 11. And I'll just have some fatty meat. Like, you know, we went and just bought a quarter of a cow here in Austin, Texas. And, you know, I'll just eat some ground beef or I'll eat some salmon that I cooked up in the sous vide, maybe have some leafy greens or something like that. But when I break that intermittent fast, it's pretty like, it's just fat and protein. You know, I don't dive into much carbs because I'm usually working during the day. And then pre-workout, I've been really digging doing a mixture of some MCTs, some creatine, a little bit of carbohydrate, like 10 to 15 grams of carbs, and some ketones, and some collagen protein. So I like to make sure my body has everything that it needs. I wasn't really digging working out fasted. I felt kind of drained. But just giving it that 150 calories of kind of a cocktail of everything has been very nice for me. And then I have my big meal at dinner time, and usually it's something, again, like some just outstanding quality meat, you know, keep all the fat on there, cook it in some really high quality fat, and, you know, add some leafy green vegetables and call it a day.
So it's very important though, because a lot of people like they fuck up the keto diet. Let's be honest. Like you just said, you eat meat, but this is what they'll do. They'll go to KFC and get a bucket of chicken, and they'll be like, oh, I'm on keto diet. And they're like 350 pounds, and they're like, this shit ain't working for me. Yeah. So like specifically tell our listeners, when you mean you're eating meat, how are you cooking it and what are you cooking it in? Is it, I'm assuming it's MCT oil or coconut oil, right?
I don't cook with coconut oil just because it kind of makes my meat taste tropical. So I usually cook it in some butter or some tallow or something like that. And it, you know, I dig olive oil on my salads, you know, top it with avocado. But yeah, like you said, like the quality of your meat and fat really matters. Cause if you're only eating, a small volume of food and it's only fat and protein, if you're eating shitty quality fats, then you're going to be absorbing all those toxins that are coming from that sick animal. And so, I know people have budgets but it's really worth going the extra mile to source some outstanding meat. You'll notice that you feel a whole lot better.
So the, you need grass-fed beef, you need hormone-free chicken, all that good stuff. You need to pay a little more for it, correct? To get
it's worth it. It's worth
and then,
it.
And then you're cooking. How are you cooking this meat? Are you baking it? Are you boiling it? You're not frying it, obviously, or are you?
No, I'm a skillet man. That's my best friend in the kitchen. And then I just picked up a sous vide not too long ago, and that's been awesome. You can pretty much just cook things steakhouse perfect and can't screw it up if you try.
Do you have a girlfriend, Alex?
I don't. My grandma keeps banging on my door saying, get a girlfriend.
Well, I was gonna say a sous vide sounds like something your girlfriend would be like, Alex, you should buy this. Because I don't even know what that is. Like
It's basically just a tube that you stick into a water bath and it heats up the water bath to the perfect temperature. So say you want your steak at like 135 degrees or medium rare. And then so you just dial it up to that temperature. You put it in a plastic bag. It brings the meat to that exact temperature and you hold it there for an hour or anywhere up to like 24 hours. But it stays at the perfect doneness that entire time. So you can just pull it out and you can sear it on the skillet and it's just outstanding.
S-O-U-S is the way it's spelled. If you guys want to Google that, is they sell them on Amazon, they sell them, you know, Bed Bath and Beyond, all that stuff. So they're about $100-$150 depending on, you know, your quality. So
next podcast Alex is gonna have a chef hat on.
I'll be sitting in the sous vide, just, you know, lukewarm.
I love that you said two things. I love that you said, number one, you need to be buying high quality meats, because what you said is true. We store our toxins in our fat. So you definitely wouldn't want to be eating fatty cuts of meat from a sick animal. So make sure if you're eating beef, it's grass-fed. If it's chicken, make sure it's free-range organic. If it's fish, make sure it's wild-caught, free-range, humane eggs, things like that. The second thing I love is that you're eating vegetables, because one of the biggest misconceptions I see is that people are on a keto diet, so they assume that means no carbs, and they stop eating all vegetables, and literally all they eat is meat. You can still consume carbs on a keto diet. They just have to be fibrous carbs. So it's exactly what you said. It's things like spinach. It's things like asparagus. It's things like broccoli. Like, you wouldn't want to eat starchy carbs, you know, things like corn, but eating fibrous carbs and particularly green vegetables are very, very important. Do you have any other misconceptions about keto that you constantly see people do?
What are misconceptions, but also fruit? Is a little fruit okay or not?
Yeah, real quick on the fruit, berries has been completely fine for me, like especially when they're around a workout or right before or like in my evening meal. The berries just don't affect you. And plus, if you're about to not eat for 12 hours or something like that, a couple blueberries are not going to kick you out of ketosis. And then as far as a misconception, I think there is some outstanding literature coming out about protein on a ketogenic diet. Like, one of the big things you hear is, don't eat too much protein. It'll kick you out of ketosis. There's this thing called gluconeogenesis where, you know, your body has the capability to convert protein to glucose within the body. And that is true. Like, that process exists, but it exists whether you're in ketosis or not. And it happens more on a demand basis rather than a supply basis. So it's not like if you eat, if your threshold is 120 grams of protein today and each day and you eat 125 grams, it's not like those extra 5 grams get converted and zapped into gummy bears within your body. And then, you're all of a sudden out of ketosis. It's things like stimulus, like exercising, are things that will cause your body to make glucose within your body. And thank God it does. Like, that's why when we go on keto, it doesn't drop your blood sugar to zero. It just stabilizes it because it keeps manufacturing the amount that it needs. So I would encourage people who are getting into keto to, you know, get comfortable testing the upper limits of protein, because you're going to feel a whole lot stronger and maintain more lean body mass with an increased protein intake. So everyone's fearful of, you know, that protein limit. I'd say test it out for yourself and lean into it.
Also, nuts. Here's the problem. My dad's a big nut eater. And then I'll go, like, he buys those Planters nuts, and I'll go look at the label, and it's got, like, soybean oil, it's got all these fillers, it's got, like, 20 ingredients in it. And I try to explain to him, like, you know, nuts, I'm not against nuts. I eat a lot of nuts. Nuts are a big part of my diet. But I'm like, you got to get the raw nuts. and, you know, that don't have anything in it. So is that another mistake that people make in keto? They're eating, like, if they want to eat nuts, they're getting the wrong nuts. They're not getting the raw nuts.
So glad you brought that up, because roasted nuts are generally, you know, roasted with vegetable oils, and vegetable oils are incredibly toxic to your cells, and they basically set off a zombie apocalypse of oxidative stress within your body. And so you're really harming yourself more than, you know, any benefit that you're getting from the nuts. So like you said, source raw nuts, and unless it says it's roasted with, you know, a specific oil that is not.
Another big one is beef jerky. All the time I see people eating beef jerky, and they're like, bro, it's meat, it's keto. But I'm like, have you ever read the ingredients on beef jerky? They're like, why? What do you mean? I'm like, go read the ingredients. The second ingredient is going to be sugar or high fructose corn syrup.
But I don't want to blame the victim, because I think we do this too much. I mean, in the fitness community, we always blame the victim. I blame the companies. I blame the commercials. You don't see raw nuts, a commercial for raw nuts, but you damn well see commercials for Planters nuts or those other nuts that you buy from the gas station. So, I mean, people really have to, like, educate themselves, but also you can't, like, just, like, blame the victim and be like, oh, you know, the victim is stupid, you know, for doing this. I blame, like, the you know, media and the advertising and the marketing, because it does work. People are naive, you know?
Absolutely. And companies certainly have the means to make a product that is healthy, like, especially with beef jerky. There is no need for there to be sugar in it. Like, yes, that can help, you know, cure the beef, but the reason they use sugar is because it helps hold as much water as possible, so it makes the beef jerky look plump and desirable. But there's absolutely no need to have sugar in beef jerky.
I agree with you, Steve. You know, all three of us are very educated when it comes to nutrition, but the average person is so confused because there's so much information out there, they don't even know where to start, right? So, like, let's say someone's a little bit overweight and they're like, hey, I'm gonna start taking care of myself, I'm gonna lose some weight, I'm gonna get in shape. So they go to a bookstore and they buy a magazine, right? They buy a Men's Health. The first article is on keto diets. The second article, it's on carb cycling. The third article, it's on intermittent fasting. The fourth article is on paleo. The fifth article is on plant-based vegan diets, right? Like, that person, they're more confused than when they started. Like, they read that magazine and they're like, oh my goodness, I don't even know what the heck to do. So they basically just, like, put the magazine back on the shelf and they're like, I guess I'm just fat, right? So, like, I honestly feel bad for people. It's, there's so, like, we live in a society now where there's so much information. People make super simple concepts way more complicated than it needs to be.
That's so awesome. Like, you see it every day. People are just bewildered. And I think it's remarkable how, you know, we're humans and we're supposed to be the most intelligent creatures, but yet we're, like, the only species that has screwed up the most basic question of what do we eat? You know what I mean?
I love it, Alex.
Gatorade's a perfect example, Trevor and Alex. Like, Gatorade, you see these commercials on TV, Peyton Manning's on the treadmill running, sweating. They're like, wow, Gatorade's been proven in studies to help you replenish the workout. You know, so it's like, people believe that shit. Like, if I tell someone Gatorade's bad for you, they look at me like I'm crazy. Like, what the fuck are you talking about, Gatorade's bad for me? Peyton Manning drinks it. You know, it's just like, you can't overcome billions of dollars of advertising. So you just gotta, like, you know, hopefully people will get a clue, you know, eventually when they find out it doesn't work, but it's not working. We keep getting fatter in this country. So
Steve, a 12 pack of Gatorade and the newest Nike kicks, and you're guaranteed an MBA placement. Simple as that. So Alex, we got two more listener questions for you. This person sent me, like, a freaking novel, but basically it sums up to this, is that he's hearing about the bulletproof coffee, the MCT, the brain octane, all that sort of stuff. He wants to know, like, what exactly it is and if it's a scam or not.
Absolutely. So I have two thoughts on bulletproof coffee and just loading up on a coffee with butter and with MCTs and stuff like that. MCTs, first of all, are a fat, and they're a shorter chain fat. They're a medium chain triglyceride. And so what happens is they're much easier to break down and metabolize. And so they don't have to be shoveled around the entire digestive system. And they're going to lead to ketone production very easily. So you're going to notice like a very nice mental clarity from that. So I love MCTs. I take some daily. However, I think we rely on these high fat coffees a little bit too much. And even though MCTs are great and butter is great and like to use for cooking and stuff like that, they're not that nutritious to just be dumping. Like you're, it's like there's an opportunity cost where you're consuming these calories, but you're not getting dynamite nutrition like you might be from grass-fed meats or organ meats or vegetables and stuff like that. So I feel like we can ease off the butter coffees a little bit. But that being said, I do like MCT oil throughout my day.
Steve, you got anything to chime in or should I read off our next listener question? I will take that as I will read off the next listener question.
No, I was on mute. I'm sorry. But I've seen Bulletproof coffee now, like in Whole Foods and stuff, in like a little package. To do the Bulletproof coffee correctly, just like the other things we talked about, you can't buy it in a little thing, right? You've got to actually make it yourself. Because this is an example like of people screwing shit up. Like they're buying, they see it on the shelf in the store and they buy it. And then, but it's nothing close to as if they just took the time to buy the MCT oil and buy the cream and, you know, buy the stuff on their own.
Yeah, I'd agree.
Or even from Starbucks, especially. They sell, oh, Bulletproof coffee. I wouldn't trust that shit.
I think it's dicey. And I definitely think the Bulletproof coffee tastes better when you make it at home versus buying it in the package. I think those are good in a pinch, and especially compared to other processed foods and stuff like that. Like if I was in an airport trying to maintain a ketogenic diet, shoot, I would grab one of those Bulletproofs. That sounds great. But, you know, best case scenario, I'm whipping it up at home.
What upsets me about the Bulletproof is that the marketing is designed to trick people. Like I've seen so many people, they're like, oh, I'm drinking this high fat coffee every morning. I'm in keto, but they're not following a keto diet. Like they think if they drink this coffee, they're going to all of a sudden be in ketosis and what they do the rest of the day doesn't matter. So I don't really have an issue with Bulletproof and I understand everyone out there is trying to make a buck, but just the way they market it, with this like brain octane ketogenic formula is like, it tricks people into thinking like all they need to do is drink this high fat butter MCT oil coffee in the morning and then they're going to be burning fat the rest of the day.
Absolutely. It's a great point.
Okay. Our next listener question, I'm not sure if this is for Alex, but he sent it to me right after I posted Alex's profile picture. So let's just assume. Hey, what's up, bro? My name is Safir. I've been lifting for 6 years, put on 35 pounds of muscle, and have great genetics, but just feel discouraged because I don't use PEDs. Can I compete on a pro level without roids? I see all the guys get gynecomastia at my gym from using for years. In Hawaii, it's a widespread thing. Hardly any natural lifters make it past a year or two. By the way, I listened to your podcast and subscribed.
I don't have a great answer. Can you rephrase the question?
He basically wants to know, can you become a professional bodybuilder without steroids? It doesn't really have anything to do with keto, but.
I don't know.
Tell us, Alex, in your situation, were you overweight previously? And because you look pretty fit, I can't really see if you have abs or not. I don't know what. But did you go from being like kind of average guy to like extremely fit because of the keto? So is it possible for someone to get on a really solid keto diet, shred up so they can compete? Or is the keto diet not as, magic? Is it not magical?
Yeah, so my story is, I was back when I was 23, 6 years ago, I was like hopelessly addicted to drugs and alcohol. And I ended up getting clean when I was 23, and that's when I started getting healthy. So that's when I went from being a fat mess to kind of getting in shape. And then I've always just kind of been in good shape since then, like doing whatever style of eating you want to choose. But then I went to keto just out of like curiosity. Like I'm always trying to experiment with things, and you know, it's kind of just been kind of the same as far as body composition, but I can totally see how people would come to it for the weight loss, because you can feel extremely good and not hungry while eating a weight loss diet. So I think it's tempting to think that, oh, I can just eat keto and get shredded, because you see Instagrammers, you know, positioning it that way. I just hasn't been my experience. So I don't know the answer, but there are definitely folks out there who are natural bodybuilders eating a ketogenic diet. One of my favorite people is Robert Sykes, and he goes by the alias Keto Savage, and he's a great resource for natural bodybuilding on a ketogenic diet.
So what did change in your life besides, you know, getting clean and stuff? Tell us about, like, did your cholesterol levels change, and, you know, other stuff change in your health-wise?
Oh, yeah. So the first month I ever did keto, I did like a 30-day keto crash, and my cholesterol did improve, as well as my triglycerides, and just overall cognitively, I felt fantastic throughout the whole day. And I was like, this is it. I'm rolling with this. This is going to be my default from now on.
So Alex, first of all, I want to congratulate you for getting clean, and I want to thank you for being open. Because obviously you're a smart guy, like, you're good looking, you have a chemical engineering degree. How did you even get into drugs and alcohol in the first place? Because just on the outside looking in, I would look at you as a, you know, a young 23-year-old man. It would almost seem like you have the perfect life. Like, here's this good-looking guy. He's got a chemical engineering degree. I mean, you could probably get multiple different job offers. How did you even get into that world? Like, that seems like something someone of your education would never get into.
Yeah, absolutely. So I asked myself the same question. Like, why are you feeling this way? Why are you doing these absurd, insane behaviors and stuff like that? And you know, at some level, I knew that, you know, especially opiates, I knew that I had gotten hold of something that had just got a hold of me, and I was not really in charge anymore. And, you know, surely I was thinking to myself, like, you know, surely you're smart enough to get yourself out of this situation, but that just wasn't the case. And it happened just progressively. I started in college, and opiates were like very, very common at the college I went to. And it didn't seem like a big deal. I don't know how, but it just didn't seem like a big deal to...
Were you in the wrong crowd? Or did you kind of, someone came up to you and be like, at a party or something, hey, bro, try this, and kind of get hooked? Was it like the wrong crowd type thing?
When you're in a very, very stressful academic curriculum, like engineering, law, med, you'd be amazed at the amount of recreational drugs students are using just because they're so stressed and they use it as an outlet.
100%. You see folks around you that are your peers that you look up to that you think, boy, these guys are smarter than me and getting better grades, and, you know, they're doing it. And I think there's something about me, like, why I identify as, like, being a person that gets addicted to drugs. Like, I feel like some people would take painkillers or take alcohol and they go, oh, like, you know, that felt good, I've had enough. And that's just not the case for me. Like, for some reason, I have a reaction within my body where, like, I want to have more afterwards, and the next day. So it develops into this, compulsion within your body. And then you also have this obsession in your mind that I can do it one more time without consequence. And it's this insane thought, but it really is pervasive. And so you're kind of like, your body is saying, don't do anymore. Your mind's saying, don't stop. So it's kind of a tough situation to be in, and I can understand how it really, you know, affects a lot of people.
Well, my advice on that, I never did drugs in college, or even though it was offered in high school. My advice to that, my dad taught me from a young age, don't be a follower, be a leader. So if you're a follower, you know, you're going to do what your buddies do, you know, your frat buddies, they're going to get you doing stuff you don't want to do. Because you want to be part of something. You want to be, you know, part of, you know, be cool, you know, but it's not cool to be a follower. So all you guys, young guys listening, don't be followers in life, be leaders. You know, if that guy offers you something, be like, no, and then just walk away. That's it. And they'll look at you like, wow, this person is fucking a leader, you know, and they will be upset at you for not accepting it because they want you to be depressed like them and have to use drugs and alcohol to get yourself up. So that's a way to kind of combat that. Just remember that. Don't be a follower. So I have a question for you, Alex. would it make sense to get into ketosis? A quicker way to get into ketosis to fast, like for a day or two, and then jump into the keto diet to kind of get a leg up on it? Because I noticed, because I do prolonged fasting, and I noticed like after 1, 2, sometimes 3 days, but usually it's like 1 or 2 days with me, I'm in ketosis. I'm pissing ketones after the second day. So would that make sense? Or is it something where you should just start the diet, and then how long would it take to get into ketosis?
It's a great question. And I think there's two approaches, and you just have to start by being honest with yourself where you're coming from. If you're coming from an awful standard American diet and you eat whatever the hell you want, and you try to just fast for a couple of days, it's going to be insanely painful and you're probably going to fail. And the whole goal here is compliance. And so I would recommend, if you're coming from an extremely poor diet, to first start by just eating real foods that grow on this planet, and eat a lot of vegetables, get your carbs from vegetables. And then, you know, do that for a couple of weeks, pretty much go the paleo low carb approach, and then dive into a ketogenic diet. And, you know, just that discipline you will have acquired from a couple of weeks of just eating real food will serve you very well. That being said, if you have been eating a pretty clean diet and, you know, you're feeling good, I say just go for it. And fasting is definitely the fastest way to get into ketosis. You know, anything that you consume is going to hinder your progress towards ketosis. So it definitely makes it easier to just dive in. But I'd say if you're really coming from a tough spot, be easy on yourself and come up with like a 2-week plan.
So how long would it take if you're coming from a shitty diet and you go into ketosis, how long would it take to start pissing out ketones, like at a decent level? Week, 2 weeks?
Yeah, if you went from a shitty diet straight to eating a ketogenic diet, it would probably take 3 to 4 days to start peeing ketones, but it would take much longer to start feeling good. Like you might still feel shitty at 10 days, and then, you know, around that time, that 1 to 2 week period, you start feeling a little bit better, a little bit better, and it might take 4 to 6 weeks before you really feel like you're clicking on all cylinders. So in that sense, it's very discouraging to some people because it sucks. That feeling sucks. And but on the other side,
can you be specific? A lot of our listeners might be out of shape. They're fat. They want to change, you know, their physique and everything, and they want to try keto. So what are things that they're going to have to kind of get over? Is it a craving for sugar, craving for carbs, craving for McDonald's? What is the things that you have seen from people?
Absolutely. I think it's not too dissimilar from the feeling of craving a drink or a drug. It's like, oh my God, I'm feeling uncomfortable. How do I change the way I'm feeling? And one of the ways we do it is with food and things that are hyper palatable, like McDonald's, or like anytime that you combine fats with sugars, you know, that's a way to just put your brain at ease and light it up like a Christmas tree at the same time. And so you got to just kind of recognize that craving for what it is, and the fact that you're just trying to, you know, cope with feelings, really. And it's tough sometimes because there's social pressures. You feel like, you know, people are judging you because you're trying to be healthy. I have a quick story. I have an aunt who is outstanding at giving up all sweets for Lent, 40 days. She could do it perfectly, feel no cravings, because she is always saying, yeah, I'm giving up sweets for Lent. But if she tries to get healthy and not eat sugar, just because she wants to get healthy, she struggles mightily to just tell people, yeah, I'm not going to eat that dessert. I'm trying to be healthy right now. So it takes a lot of courage to get healthy, but I would encourage you to, you know, get comfortable and do healthy things in a social setting, because what's really happening is you're inspiring everyone around you.
Alex, I really, really want to thank you for coming on this podcast and being so honest. I just listened to a TED Talk. So what a TED Talk is that's when a professor showcases some of the research they're doing. And in this TED Talk, they showed a brain scan, and it showed someone taking a hit of heroin, and it showed someone consuming a Coke, like a regular Coke that's full of sugar. The serotonin release was identical, which basically allows you to extrapolate in saying that sugar is just as addictive as recreational drugs. And one thing me and Steve, we really try to do on this podcast is we really try to keep it real. And you're a great example. You know, like, you're a good looking guy, you've got a great education, and you fell down a bad path. About 10 episodes ago, we had Antoine Vollant on, who was one of the best bodybuilders in the world. He won his pro card at a very young age. He got picked up by all the magazines. He was on the cover of every single magazine. People were, you know, basically predicting him to be the next Mr. Olympia. He did the same thing. He got into drug addiction. Right? So this can happen to anyone. And most people listening to this podcast are struggling from some sort of addiction, whether it be gambling, pornography, substance, something. One of the best pieces of advice I can give people, this is exactly what you did, Alex, is channel that stress, channel that negative energy into something productive, like going to the gym. And that's exactly what you did, Alex, is, you know, you found this ketogenic diet, you found a new lifestyle, you found a new diet approach. Now when you're stressed, now when you're having a bad day at work, you get in a fight with a coworker, a fight with a buddy, you're channeling it into your workouts. So I really appreciate you coming on this podcast, Alex, and having no filter and being so genuine. Your website is perfectketo.com. Is that correct?
Yes, indeed. That's the place.
Perfectketo.com. Alex has been nice enough for all of our listeners. If you use the coupon code Trevor, it'll save you 20% off your entire order. What are some of your favorite products on Perfect Keto? Give us a plug before we finish off this show here.
My favorite topic. They're all my babies. However, I love on my day to day, I do the MCT oil powder. I prefer it to the oil just because it's more convenient and I can just take it anywhere. And this salted caramel just came out and it's phenomenal. So that's my highest recommendation. The exogenous ketones, this is the peaches and cream flavor. I dig that just like heavily diluted in ice water and I just sip on that. And then one of my new favorite products, which is coming your way, Trevor, is the Keto Nootropic. So that's a blend of herbs and amino acids and caffeine and BHB and a whole bunch of other things. But I just take a quarter scoop of that in the beginning of my day and really helps me feel great.
And Alex, you're located in Austin, Texas, right?
Yep, just moved from San Francisco.
Okay, any females listening to our podcast? Alex is in his mid-20s. If you'd like his contact info, you can send me a DM. I'll be the screen man, so I'll make sure that they're not crazy and they don't have like 100 cat photos on their Instagram. And if they seem cool, I'll send them your way.
Yes, all right.
He can take you to Whole Foods. That's where Whole Foods was founded, Austin, Texas. You guys must have a hell of a Whole Foods there, huh?
Yep, and we can make fun of the hot bar that still serves with canola oil.
Yeah, I know, right? That doesn't make any sense, but hey, it's got to taste good, right? You know, the kids won't eat it if it doesn't taste good.
I'm in Canada. We have Whole Foods in a couple provinces. We don't have them here in Winnipeg yet.
You know what? I stopped eating their hot food bar. I just make everything on my own. I mean, like you said, there's shit you can buy. Just learn to cook. I mean, everything's at your disposal. So no reason to get the hot food bar. Do that to lazy people, you know?
For your host, Trevor Karitson, for my co-host, Steve Smee, and for our special guest, Alex Cunningham of PerfectKeto.com, this is another episode of Evolutionary Radio. Live your life, look good doing it. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.